Jack Stein and Spike O'Neill, Mr. Union Buster himself. Isn't that right,
Spike? That's me, man. That's me. I'm blood related to Jimmy Hoffa, actually. Never would have known that. Same height.
You know, Spike, days like today are always really difficult for me. I'm a very empathetic person. I'm a sensitive person. I tried to deny it for many, many years. You know, being a radio guy, I'm this tough guy, and I can deliver the news, you know, effectively and very in a very impartial way. But when, you know, you hear about an officer getting shot in the head, when you hear about a shootout, when you hear about violence, police presence, for me, it always... I just get very transparent with it. Do you know what I mean, Spike? It affects me at a very emotional level because even though I don't know the officer personally, I have a lot of respect for the men and women who put their lives on the line so that we can live in a civilized society. And when they are injured in the line of duty by ne'er-do-wells, I am filled with appreciation but also just sadness for that, for what they have to give so that we can stave off chaos. You know what I mean?
I do. And we're in a society now where every single day there's another. And it's not this is the second police officer shot in the line of duty this week.
Right.
But every day there's a shooting somewhere, whether it's gang violence, whether it's an attempted robbery like last night in Everett.
Yeah.
I mean, there is gun violence has become the daily effect of its affect of our life. You get numb to it. And when you're someone like you who's empathetic. And I hope to feel the same way. I try to be understanding, empathetic, sympathetic to folks and what they're going through. But every single day, it's tough to come in here and talk about the things that our community is facing on a daily basis and still remember that it's beautiful outside. It's 50s. It's a spring day in Seattle. It's a wonderful time to be an American in this city. I don't mean to be so, you know, hyperbolic, but... You come in every day and the news just starts to wear you down. It's impossible not to.
I don't necessarily get numb to it, Spike. I don't necessarily get, you know, because for me, it's like every time I hear about it, I still have the same set of emotions around it. My concern, though, is that there is people out there who maybe they hear it so often and we hear it so much that we start to kind of fade out in the background from it.
Yeah.
So, and it's interesting that you bring it up, you know, like when George Floyd was murdered, right? The next day, I remember I was listening to, I won't mention this particular broadcaster's name. He's not affiliated with the station in any way, shape, or form, but he went on his show and he decided to talk about crime rates in Chicago. And he said, why doesn't anybody care about crime rates in Chicago? People get shot and killed in Chicago on a regular basis.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, I care. I care that I don't want to see – what are you talking about? I think most people care about violence. I think most people don't want to see somebody get hurt or injured or killed. But I think what happens is that because there is a regular onslaught of it, that people – it begins to kind of fade out into the background. We kind of lose our connection to it as human beings, and we think of it happening to an abstract figure rather than to a living, breathing human being with a life. And have you ever heard the term sonder to sonder?
Yeah, sure.
It's for people who don't know anything about that phrase. It means to wonder about someone else's life that you don't personally know. So it's almost to have like a fantasy, not in a weird way, not in like a Spike O'Neill kind of way.
Right, right. It's not like in a 500 feet, you know, capacity. I hear you.
It means to wonder about, like there's a guy who works at the Whole Foods that I go to, and this guy's got Star Wars pins flare all over his,
Okay.
shirt.
Yeah.
And so
you want to put yourself in his stormtrooper boots for an afternoon, right?
That's what it means to sonder.
Yeah.
Is to wonder about someone that you don't personally know. And so I do that when I hear about police officers, they get shot and they get injured or they get killed in the line of duty. I just think about their lives outside of, you know, behind the badge. You know, I think about what else they were doing and what their priorities were or whatever. And it gets to me, man. It really does.
You know, I had an uncle who was killed in the line of duty. Before I was born, I didn't lose an uncle. My dad's little brother was a police officer in Baltimore City and was killed in the line of duty in 1959, I want to say. So I have a real deep connection. I don't have a real deep connection, but you know, my dad was never the same. after losing his brother in the line of duty. And, you know, I'm never the same. I didn't know him beforehand, but I'm just going by what my grandma told me, what his siblings told me. And they, none of them were. And the families of officers live a life we will never understand.
Yeah.
Absolutely never begin to fathom the daily. We talk about anxiety levels in the city and what causes anxiety levels. Anybody who's got a family member or who is serving in law enforcement, that's a daily way of life. And when you see these stories day after day after day about the officers just being disregarded as humans, I mean, to put a point on what you're trying to get across here, these are human beings who are taking on a job that we need desperately and everybody wants wholeheartedly. You know, you can talk about defunding or realigning how funds are spent to help protect our communities, which is really what the argument should be framed as. But what we forget is that these are people who make a choice to take on a job. And a lot of guys love the job.
Yeah.
They really do. They feel that they were born to be of service. And this is how they manifest that lifelong goal to serve. And when we see them taken, and you know, this robbery in Everett last night, this officer was shot, but from what I'm understanding by the coverage, it was a stray shot.
Okay.
If I'm understanding correctly, it wasn't targeted. Like those four officers, it was almost 10 years ago now. Those four officers were ambushed and targeted at a coffee shop down in Pierce County. This wasn't like that, or this wasn't someone who was involved in a direct confrontation like the eviction attempt earlier this week, where an officer died in direct gunfire conflict with someone who was being evicted from a home. This was just somebody who was responding to a call, and that's how random it can be for the members of the law enforcement community. That's how quickly everybody in that family, everybody in that community that knew this officer. And I'll pray and good, kind thoughts for his recovery. He's in the hospital. This officer who was shot up in Everett is in the hospital now. But even if he manages to survive, which I hope and pray that he does, their lives are altered forever.
Yeah.
And you're right. It just happens so often. It's hard for us to make that human connection. And the fact that we see it so often, and violence has become such a constant part of our culture, whether it's through crime, whether it's through just community interaction, whatever it is, violence has just become such an everyday occurrence. And that's the job we chose, is to bring it to the community, or to bring information and our opinions about this and what we can do to help maybe solve this.
I got a story for you, man, because I often push back against the ACAB people or the defund of the police people. I really do push back against it as much as I
think everybody should. I think that kind of messaging is horrifically idiotic and dangerous.
Right. So that's what me and Joe Biden have in common, other than our love of ice cream.
Right. And you can't ride a bike worth a crap. but I digress.
A couple of years ago, maybe 3-4 years ago, and I've told this story before, but I'll tell it again. I'm in my apartment. I'm in a duplex, and I got a big old deck outside. And it's in the summertime, it's really nice to go out and you kind of hang out on it because it's nice, it's warm outside, so I can kind of lounge and think about all the mistakes I've made in my life. And so I hear in the far distance what sounds like somebody dragging metal and whistling Dixie at the same time, if that makes sense. Like, it's, you hear that scraping of, like, almost like an axe murderer or something.
Yeah, the kind of stuff horror movies deliver. Yeah.
So I hear this, very maniacal, dark tune being whistled in the far distance. And so me being a nosy neighbor, I go, what's going on? And I look over my deck and I look down the street, which has a, direct eye line all the way down. And I see that there's a guy, he's a homeless guy, who has ripped a stop sign out of the ground, and he is dragging it behind him whilst he is attempting to whistle what sounds like Fleetwood Mac almost, but like the dark, like the twisted version what's that song? That song, you know what I'm talking about?
I don't.
Dreams? Is that the song?
Thunder only happens when it's raining, that one?
Yeah.
So I go,
this is creepy. And then all of a sudden a cop pulls up to this guy. Somebody called the police. No lights, doesn't pull up with any lights. He pulls up to the guy, gets out of his car. He says, hey boss, where are you going?
You're going with our stop sign.
Stop sign. And this guy is talking to the cop about it, and another cop rolls up, and they're chatting with the guy, and the guy's clearly very mentally ill. Now, keep in mind, this guy has this stop sign, which at any point in time could be used to attempt to decapitate an officer, right? At any point in time, this guy could pick this up and huck it at somebody and try to injure them. But these two cops just talking to the guy, and he's clearly very mentally ill. So they put him in the back of the cop car. No handcuffs. Don't tackle him to the ground. Just lead him in the back of the cop car. The other cop takes the stop sign and tries to find where the guy, you know, took it out of the ground. But no one will ever talk about that interaction where two cops rolled up to this guy who was clearly not well and clearly had a weapon in his hand. And they treated him with dignity and respect.
And de-escalated the situation.
No one will ever talk about that. What these ACAB people talk about is they talk about people like Chauvin, right? Or they talk about the people, that, like the officer that killed Daniel Schaefer, who are not emblematic of the police department as a whole. And then they run with that narrative. And now you have a certain percentage of the population that believes that narrative, largely because they don't get to see the things that, let us just say, that I saw with those cops. And that one guy who they very and I'm just saying, in a hypothetical situation, they could have come out, guns drawn, sir, get on the ground, drop the weapon. He's coming right for me. They could have capped him and nobody would have been the wiser. Right. So point being, I think that there's a perspective that many people need to take when we talk about the police and their job, and that it is a complicated job and a difficult job. I know it seems kind of trite to say, but it is for me, when I try to talk about it, I want to people to recognize that these people are literal heroes.
Yeah.
And so to say anything otherwise against guys that have committed no crimes as police officers, I find it to be pretty gross.
Well, a couple things that really quick, let me say this. Cause in,
sure.
The officer is in stable condition.
Yes.
The officer that was shot in Everett. And as per eyewitness testimony, the assailant was shooting at the patrol car as it rolled up to the scene. So it wasn't just a stray random. I misspoke.
Okay.
And the folks who have problems with police officers, there is a right and almost a requirement to speak out loudly against officers who abuse the power of their position.
Yeah.
But like you've said, and we've all said, that that's such a small, minuscule, microscopic percentage of the people who do law enforcement work. And to blanket them all with the ACAB, whatever, you know, I know what it stands for, never, or defund. The people who speak to them all with that disdain and that disrespect and disregard, they're doing so much damage. They're doing so much damage to the community relations with law enforcement. And if you don't think we need law enforcement now more than ever, boy, wake up.
Do you know where ACAB got its start, by the way? It's a fun fact that a lot of these kind of hardcore lefties don't know.
I don't.
So ACAB was started by skinheads in the late 80s and the early 90s. Skinhead punk rockers, who that was their tag to let people know that was their territory. So and you can go back and you can read all about it. So these skinhead neo-Nazis were going around and they were throwing up ACAB all over the place. And somehow along the way, a bunch of, you know, hardcore lefty types decided that they were going to adopt that acronym, not realizing its origins are the worst of the worst kind of origins. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. So, well, ignorance is embraced by a lot of communities like that.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
Let's make America great again. I think that was stamped on the back of Klan coins back in the 1920s.
Yeah. There are certain phrases out there that I think people need to stay away from.
Yeah.
But also, you know, by the way, Spike, when we talk about police and we're talking about policing, there was a study here from Axios Seattle talking about how Seattle car thefts have spiked 73% over the last 3 years.
Right.
And, you know, they've got a breakdown between Kia or Hyundai, which seems to be, you know, the car to steal these days, thanks to TikTok.
You betcha.
And then other vehicles as well. But when I think about, when I look at statistics like this, and when we talk about statistics like this, I'm happy that this kind of information comes out, because then we can talk about it and then people can vote accordingly when somebody comes out and they say something like, I want to defund the police. Because the more that we have this information, we can either be angry about it and we can be irate about it and I can, you know, threaten to fire Chris Martin for the third time today, or what we can do is we can say, look at this information, look what it says about these kinds of policies, look what they produce, and let's vote accordingly so that we don't have another 73% spike over the next 3 years, right?
Absolutely. And we, you know, Matt Markovich was speaking this morning about the ongoing pursuit bill in Olympia and what it can and can't. I mean, it's so confusing. It's so convoluted. The list of things that officers aren't allowed to pursue because of, I think it ties directly to this. I think the idea that, you know, you can get away with anything these days.
Yes. Yeah,
and the
yeah.
cops aren't going to be able to do anything about that because we're being so cautious and careful. And not that I'm for, you know, high speed chases. I'm not. But when people know they're not going to be pursued, it's a green flag. It's you know, the go for it. It's a starting pistol. And 73% increase, and it's not just the TikTok challenge. That's only been in what, the last 4 months, 6 months?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not sure how long, but the Hyundai, Kia, you know, this is how to steal a car. And how that's not, you know, putting those videos out to the public, how that's not, you know, accessory to Grand Theft Auto, I will never know.
Spike, it's educational. We're trying to teach the kids real skills on TikTok. Okay, we're trying to.
I want the balance a checkbook challenge. That's what I want.
Yeah. I want to do the dishes challenge.
Oh my gosh!
How about one of those?
Clean the table. The help an old lady across the street challenge.
Yeah, how about help mom with the groceries challenge? That would be pretty cool, right?
Or yeah, like, buddy.
The take out the garbage challenge. That would be a really good one.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, Spike, before we got to get out, we only got like the 60 seconds here, but tell me if I'm in the wrong here. Just on the subject of taking out the garbage, I have been for the last however many months, when it's garbage day, I take out all the cans for all the units that I live around.
Right on.
Because when I do the radio show, I don't want to hear someone dragging the can. Down.
Okay, yeah.
Right.
Whistling Fleetwood Mac dragging the can. Yeah.
So I do it. But the thing is that what I would like in return for that is for someone else to bring in some of the cans. Like, I'll take your cans out, but I'm going to bring my cans back in because that's when the show is over. But what I've found is that my neighbors are now very passively aggressive. They're just leaving the cans. Just leaving them in the street. They don't even bother anymore.
Well, a sense of community is just dying, buddy.
And so this is my thought, man. I think we got to get the sense of community back in our neighborhoods, where if your neighbor does something nice, because they work all day except for Joe. And, you know, I've got neighbors. They work all day. And so I think it's a nice gesture that I do. But am I being passive aggressive by not bringing the cans back in after I was the one to bring them out?
That's it's a subtle message to, hey, we all need to chip into this together. Nobody's paying me to drag your cans in and out.
Right.
I'm doing it. I'm being nice. How about showing a little reciprocal goodwill?
All right. Well, people text me and let me know, should I just stop doing it outright and only do my cans, or should I do all of the cans both ways, all the time? Tell me. Help me figure out this deep and philosophic issue that we need to go through.
Aggressive will be dragging him at 3:30 in the morning while whistling loudly. That'd be passive aggressive.
You know what, Spike? You know what we didn't get to that I think we should get to is the Seattle landlords can now ask about a very specific thing when you rent from them.
Let's do that next.
And that seems very important. So stick around. You're going to want to hear about this if you're looking to rent coming up after this. All right. Welcome back. So before we get into Seattle landlords asking about criminal records, a lot of people chimed in on my trash can debacle, where I am taking out the trash cans for my neighbors and they do not bring them back in. Spike, have you got these text messages? Can you see these?
I got them.
So 206 says, Jack, you're creating a false dichotomy in my opinion. Why care if people don't bring them in? Yes, you involved yourself, but people should be grateful you're doing half the work. That said, if you think you're causing confusion, maybe put a sign that explains you're putting them out to reduce noise during an online work meeting. Communication is always the answer. Happy face. Thumbs up.
Serious. That's a good call.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to put up a huge sign. It's going to be 8x10.
Maybe just a recorded message that you can play every hour from midnight to 8 a.m. Attention, neighbors.
Okay, so my landlord has decided to put up security cameras all around the properties, and it's really sweet. It's really nice of him to do that. But unfortunately, he forgot to turn off the feature where when you walk past them, the voice says, "Hello, you are currently being recorded." So I hear that about 5 or 6 times a day now, every time I go outside.
That's the same thing I get when I walk down the Sudafed aisle at the grocery store. It really is.
So, Spike, interesting question. It's a kind of an interesting philosophic question that should your landlord be able to ask about your criminal record? Well, a court hath ruled that yes, they can, correct?
Correct. Well, a court had said this law is kind of funky. A law was passed in 2017 that landlords were not allowed to ask about criminal backgrounds. And the reason being, the city felt and found that a disproportionate number of people were experiencing an inability to find housing because of their criminal record, and a disproportionate number of that community were communities of color. And they found that that was causing a higher level of homelessness among that community. So what the court, what the Ninth Circuit ruled was, it's unconstitutional for landlords to be able to not ask these questions. There's a free speech, pursuit of true and public information about a potential tenant. Now, what the court ruled was, they kept part of it and threw out part of it. They kept the part where you can now ask about criminal backgrounds, but you cannot use that adversely against potential tenants, if that makes sense. You can find out someone has a criminal record, but you can't make that the deciding factor on not renting to them. Now, the city also understands that's a pretty tough needle to thread. There's no way to really guarantee or even verify that someone has been denied because of their criminal record. So city attorney and
Ann Davidson,
thank you. She's saying we're going to go back and look at this and see if there's a way to cleave this law in two, to separate the ability to ask questions from the ability to hold that against potential tenants. And there's other cities where the laws have been passed to kind of clean up the murky element of this particular law. For example, landlords in other cities can ask about potential crimes and only hold that against tenants if there are certain types of crimes, like, for example, excessive violent crimes or sexual offending crimes, which would make it imperative, you know, for a landlord to know who they're renting to with relation to this, their safety, the safety of their other tenants. Also, like a time frame. Was this in the last, you know, 3, 5, 7 years? To use that as a factor in deciding whether or not to rent to someone.
I kind of wish, Spike, and maybe this is wishful thinking, but when I wish we could go back to the 1950s in many ways in the way that we deal with each other as human beings. Because when I wanted to rent this, I live in a duplex. It's a house. There's a house on top of a house. It's very, very nice. When I met my landlord, when I first spoke to him, no lease agreement, none of this background credit report, none of that stuff.
Right, right.
Handshake deal. I'll pay you X amount of dollars every month. Now, during COVID, I could have very easily not paid the guy. Now, but I don't want to do that. The guy's 70-something years old. He's owned this property. His family's owned this property for I don't know how many decades.
Well, you've been there since the 50s, so God,
I'm 1,000 years old. If you heard it here. But I paid him every single month.
Sure.
And I let him know when COVID started, and they were doing the no eviction notice type stuff. I said, I'm going to pay you every single month. I have paid him every single month. He has not raised my rent one time. We just have that kind of – I wish that we could have those kinds of relationships again where your word is your bond. I know that seems kind of pie in the sky thinking, but there is a way you can have that culturally amongst people, but it's dependent on me, right, as the renter to have full disclosure with my landlord about whatever is in my life. When unemployed for a period of time, I told Mike, I said, hey, Mike's my landlord. I said, hey, Mike, I don't have a job, but I got a lot of money. And I'll be paying you every month. Don't worry about it. And if you're concerned about it, I'll cut you a check right now for the next 6 months. And he said, don't worry about it. You just pay me every month. Those are the things that make a community. Do you know what I mean?
I totally do.
Those are the kinds of things that I want to see come back. But what happens is that somebody ruins that for everybody else. You know what I mean? There's one person who decides to take advantage of Mike, and then he decides that he doesn't want to do it anymore. Now, that hasn't happened because Mike's a man of discerning taste when it comes to the people
he rents to.
But this whole you know, can you ask about someone's criminal record or whatever it is? I feel like, and again, maybe I'm being romantic about this, but a nice handshake, yes, sir, no, sir, that kind of thing gets you pretty far with someone that you want to rent from, right?
I love your optimism about who we are as a society and
Thank
a community,
you.
More specifically.
Yeah.
But we have to really guardrail ourselves against that's what we do. We guardrail against the worst out there. That's why we have.
Yeah.
You know, I'd love that no one would speed up down the freeway, but I know that's not the case. So we got speed limits. I'd love that no one would drive drunk, but that's not the case. So we got drunk driving laws.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm sure there were people that during the pandemic weren't able to pay their rent. And Mike had to deal with those hardships too. You know,
No, actually, everybody paid. Mike and I would talk about this because he's so particular about who he rents to.
Oh, okay.
You know, because he sizes you up. You know, he's a diminutive man, but he sizes you up. He's kind of a
well, I know that there were a lot of people. I know there were a lot of people who weren't able to pay, and there were a lot of landlords that were put in a difficult position because the city slapped no eviction moratoriums. Because the last thing they wanted was people who were out of work, and you know, because businesses closed down, then being homeless as well. I mean, it was a necessary evil, which put an undue burden on landlords.
Yeah, I mean, call me evil, though, Spike, and I'm willing to, you know, take the hit on this one. In my humble opinion, if you could not pay your rent during COVID-19, that is your responsibility as an adult to communicate with your landlord and move out.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I agree.
Yeah.
But, you know, there were a lot of people that were, through no fault of their own, forced into that situation. And it's not like when you can't afford to, you know, those people are going to be homeless. They can't just move. They can't afford to stay where they are, let alone get first, last security for a new place.
But my thought was that, you know, people were getting a decent amount of money. Renters in particular were getting money. People were getting checks from the government. People were getting unemployment checks.
For a period. That's exactly what happened to my daughter in New York. She had the unemployment and the federal assistance on top of that for like 6 months.
Yeah.
But when that stopped and all her roommates had moved out, she was forced to leave New York and move home to my basement across the country.
But that I think is, there's nothing wrong with that. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I couldn't take the whole country into my basement, Jack. I mean, I'm an empathetic, sympathetic guy, but I only, you know, I only got so much space.
It's going to be me and Chris Martin living in
your
basement. You
two I'd welcome in a heartbeat. We could do the show from my basement in our pajamas. It'd be fantastic.
We could have pillow fights and make
great. Then the cameras really are welcome.
All right, we'll take a really quick break, and when we get back, we should probably touch on this as well, though, Spike, the prescription shortage that's going on.
Yeah.
Across the nation, people cannot get their Adderall. And it's an interesting web we weave when trying to get our prescription medications. Find out what that is when we get back right after this. Living a semi-charmed kind of life without my Adderall. I don't take Adderall, but if I did, I'd be living a semi-charmed kind
of
life.
Less and less charmed, apparently, without, yeah.
Because children's medication, antibiotics, and treatment for ADHD are among a number of drugs that have been in short supply in recent months, and these shortages of critical medications are only rising. That's according to a new report released on Wednesday. Now, I had heard about this on Twitter about maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, Spike. People were talking about, I can't get my Adderall. And I thought, this is weird. It's an Adderall shortage in the United States. Well, as it turns out, we don't necessarily have the most transparent relationship with pharmaceutical companies and their supply chains. A lot of the pharmaceuticals that we get in the United States are actually made overseas, in Australia or in China.
Bangladesh, one of the largest pharmaceutical producers on the planet.
Right. And so now, not only are there supply chain issues with that, but because a lot of these companies don't have to disclose this information to the federal government, that maybe they're running a little low on Adderall, now the consumer is being affected. So there's this, I guess there's this bizarre set of laws where these companies don't need to disclose that they're running short to anybody. There's not a lot of regulation there. And had they done that, potentially the federal government could have come in and said, well, we'll find a different source, and we'll source these antibiotics from Germany or whatever it is. No. They have a lock on the market. And so now that the supplies are down, they get to do what they want to do. Now, am I calling for more regulation on the pharmaceutical industry? Yeah, absolutely I am. Yeah, I think that if you can't supply people with their medications like antibiotics or whatever it is. For example, propofol, which is the drug that was Michael Jackson OD'd on.
Right.
It is a
milk of amnesia, it's called.
Yes, and Jack Stein might have done it a handful.
I love your transparency and full disclosure, but sometimes,
you know, propofol is, you know, it's a bit of a, you do it about a baker's dozen worth of times, you've had enough. God. Propofol, but Andrew, we got the bingo card, by the way, going. We got that all set up.
Made it into the second hour. Almost. You people bet the under on 1 o'clock. Way to go. You pick smart.
It is used for a sedative that anesthesiologists use before surgery, and apparently it's gone in and out of shortage over the last 15 years. Now, that should be shocking to people, right, that you're going to go get a surgery done on you, and potentially they don't have this drug that should be available to everybody. And so this is something that I think is an oversight that maybe we've looked over maybe for far too long, and I think it needs to be more regulated.
You want me to tell you why it's never going to change?
Why for?
Because the pharmaceutical industry is the largest lobbying industry in Washington.
Yes.
More so than petroleum, more so than guns. Pharmaceutical industry controls more politicians through donations, so the legislature is never going to bring a solution to this because it's not in their best interest to go against their chief donors, the pharmaceutical industry. These guys have bought their way in to be able to build and produce pills overseas where they can make them for pennies on the dollar, when they get massive tax breaks from foreign governments,
yeah.
And now we don't know what the supply chain looks like in any way, shape, or form. And when the pandemic and all the other contributing factors interrupted a global supply chain on everything, including pharmaceuticals, now we have a national shortage. And it's not going to change as long as we keep blind money in politics.
Yeah, and I know there's probably a lot of people out there that are like, Jack, what do I care if some college kid can't get their Adderall? But there's the other things that are on this list are antibiotics, sterilizing medication, so on and so forth. So it's not just,
when you're going to care is when your kid can't get the medication they need.
Yes.
For allergy relief or for asthma relief or for antibiotics if they get an infection. I mean, we can't control the supply chain because the regulations on the pharmaceutical industry are being written by folks who are dependent upon the pharmaceutical industry to maintain their elected positions.
Yeah, so I had a staph infection a while back, and so Dr. Z wrote me a prescription for, to treat it. And so I don't know, I probably got it from doing yoga or something because you get so sweaty, gross. So I go to the pharmacy to pick up this antibiotic, which is a standard antibiotic. It is, brand name antibiotic. Everybody should have it. Not that big of a deal. I go to the pharmacy. The lady says, oh, I'm so sorry. We're not going to have it for 3 days.
Right.
I go 3 days because, I'm so sorry. It's a supply chain
issue. How much damage that infection can do to you in 3 days?
Well, I mean, Dr. Z cut me a prescription for a different staff.
Okay, good.
I went back to the pharmacy and they had that antibiotic. But still, I mean, if I didn't have access to that, it would have been a bad time for one Jack Stein. When we get back, we will be exploring. This is day number what, Spike? 3? I was told Donald Trump was going to get arrested.
I'm counting day 5 as per my Truth Social feed. This is day 5. I'm waiting.
It's not happening, and we'll find out whatever updates we have for you coming up next on One Former President Donald Trump. Stick around.